Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm very privileged to have a very, very successful individual, Saurabh Kocher, with me. Saurabh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Saurabh is from IIT. He's from IIM Calcutta. He's worked for McKinsey and Oracle. He's the co-founder of Food Panda, from which he has exited, and he's the co-founder of Medo, which is a private clinic chain. So, Saurabh, tell me a little bit about your early work.
Well, I think the first real experience that I had was with McKinsey, right? So this is after my MBA. So I did my engineering, then went for my MBA. And post-MBA, I started working with McKinsey. And I don't think anybody can get a better start to their career than to be sitting in the boardrooms with the likes of Sunil Bharti Mittal, you know, BK Modi, Sitla, Dr. Vaisi, and Dr. Reddy's. And I've had, honestly, a very privileged upbringing when it comes to my career. So yeah, I think I actually took a particular note and ensured that I had good amount of exposure while in McKinsey, across industries, although I did kind of specialize, you know, in strategy and organizational transformation and leadership, and from an industry perspective on healthcare and technology. But I did make sure that across the three and a half years that I spent with the firm, I was seeing many other industries from closer quarter. So yeah, I think I got lucky that way. You know, got enough and more to learn from my experience at McKinsey, and then started my first business post that.
Wonderful. And you know, then you went on to found Food Panda.
Print Venue first, then Food Panda, and then Medo.
So tell me a little bit about both these entities and what
So Print Venue, and I think FBI calls a murderer a serial murderer if they've committed three in a row. So using that definition, I can call myself a serial entrepreneur now. But yeah, Print Venue was the first one, which is an online printing portal, and we did thousands of customized products and would get you those to your doorstep in the next couple of days or so.
Right.
So it was one of its first, you know, in India when we started it. We grew the business, we took it to five countries, and then we sold the business, the South American business, to Millicom, and the Indian and the, you know, Asian business to a company called Ooredoo, which is a Middle Eastern telco. Post which I started Food Panda, which is online food ordering platform. Again, I think one of the pioneers in the industry at that point. And we ended up selling it to Ola about 2 years back, two and a half years back now.
Yeah, that must have been a very good exit.
Well, I think for an entrepreneur, no exit is a good exit, right? So you're giving away a part of you. And I don't think there is a good price or a good way to do it. Yeah. So it's always circumstances.
Well said, well said. Yeah. So let's move to Medo. Tell me about the kind of work you're doing here.
Medo, we are trying to organize the entire outpatient care space, right? And I don't think of it very differently than what we were doing in a Print Venue or a Food Panda, right? So all of these are extremely huge markets. These are extremely distributed markets. What we are trying to do is bring in a layer which kind of binds the multiple existing players together and creates standardization on top, creates some bits of, you know, organized play on top, right? So in healthcare, one of the biggest issues is the size of the clinics is very small and they're extremely distributed. So there is no standardization. There is no quality of care that is being provided. There is no use of technology. So what we are trying to do is essentially bring all of these pieces together and fuse them under one umbrella, one technology, one brand, one subscription, one insurance that can actually, you know, go to the masses as one, right? So it is, I actually find it shameful that at our stage and scale as a country, more than 80% of the healthcare expenditure is actually out of pocket. And at the same time, outpatient care is absolutely not covered by any insurance, whether private or government. right? So you have to kind of pay for yourself. And I think it's high time we change it because it's leading to adverse mindsets and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the only examples I always give is in India, 70% of the cancer cases are detected in stage 4.
Correct.
Which is a terminal stage, which is a huge cry from how it is across the world, right? Most, whether developed or developing nations, are actually much lower. So I think it tells us that there is a fundamental problem.
Correct. So I have, you know, I need to just keep ask you one more question on what you just said. What does this mean for an individual? Does it mean that I would have a Medo card, which would entitle me to insurance and OPD and medicines, et cetera, et cetera?
True. So number one, what we are doing today and what is available today is essentially one-stop care shops. So every clinic that you partner with, we ensure that everything that you need to get back on your feet is available to you right out of the clinic. What we're doing on top is exactly what you're saying, right? So it's not a card yet. So we're first starting with things like subscriptions, where your medicines are covered, your clinic visits are covered, and so on and so forth. And you can choose various gradations of it depending on how much you want to kind of be covered versus how much do you want to copay. Yeah. So I think that that's there on the way, should be out in the market soon.
Okay. And this will not tread into the realm of insurance, is it?
Or no, not yet. Not yet. Right. So if we do a fully covered package, that's when it becomes insurance. And we're partnering with various insurance companies to bring those kind of products to the market as well. Okay. But not right now.
Okay. So, you know, when I was, when I founded Guardian and we were doing, you know, building that chain, I used to, you know, interact with several of these daycare hospital chains.
Right.
Something which you're also looking at, which are the clinics, the private clinics.
Yeah. Correct.
Why did hospital daycare chains not work? And why is it that you think this will work?
Yeah. So I think the biggest problem forever has been that setting up a medical practice is a very capital intensive process.
Correct.
Right? So, and kya hota hai ki jab aap bade hospitals bana rahe hote ho, to bulk of that capital is going into infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And thereby, people are still able to take those kind of long bets.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to day practices, what you're really feeding is the manpower, is essentially the doctor, is the human capital, is the practice and the experience of the doctor. And thereby, given how we treat contracts in our country, right, there hasn't been a good way of making that investment in a doctor which can bind them into a long-term contract.
Correct.
Right? So what would happen is you would put up, let's say, between a crore and 5 crores for a half-decent clinic. And then you will feed it operationally for 4 years. By the time it starts to operationally break even, the doctors that you have start getting some response from locality and stuff like that. And at that point, the doctor will decide that they are opening their own shop.
Correct.
Because the real capital that you've built is actually the reputation of that
absolutely
center and the doctor.
Correct. So that's an interesting segue to my next question. And, you know, and I've often asked this and I've faced this myself. Doctors are the stars of every hospital.
Absolutely.
Right. And they know it.
Yes.
And there have been stories of, you know, a large hospital opening and buying 36 luxury cars to be able to retain their doctors, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
What are you doing differently that will ensure that doctors stay with you?
Wonderful. We're not buying cars. So that's a start. Yeah. So I think let me first, you know, address the first part, which is not really the question, but was the comment, right? That doctors are the stars of the care. I fully agree with that. And I think that has been one aspect which has been dominantly overlooked in the way bulk of the new age healthcare businesses have operated.
Correct.
So most of these solutions either are going around the doctor and directly to the patient, saying that we'll bypass, or they are making solutions that they're charging bomb to the doctor for. Both of those just don't work.
Mm.
What we are doing is essentially partnering, and now I'm answering your question, right? So what we are doing is essentially partnering with the doctor, ensuring we are aligning long-term objectives and incentives so that we can work together in a partnership.
Okay.
Where the center of the care, where the hero of the care is still the doctor.
Right.
And we are adding everything around the doctor that they need to run their practice.
Okay.
So we take care of all periclinical, semi-clinical, and technology, administrative aspects of the practice.
Right.
And we don't, or in fact, actually, I would say that we enable the doctor to focus purely on what they enjoy the most and what is their core strength, which is the clinical care.
Very interesting. And therefore, my next question is that there is the clinical care that takes place, and then there has to move to tertiary care.
Yes.
At what stage does Meadow hand over a patient for tertiary care?
I think that's a doctor's call in a way, right? I think doctors understand their patients the best.
Hmm.
So I think it's a clear clinical judgment that we have left with the doctors, understanding very well that not more than 1 to 2% of the cases would need hospitalization. Actually, even 2% is more. It's less than 1%, especially when it comes to outpatient care, right? So I think where and which those cases are, we leave it dominantly to the doctor's discretion in terms of how and where they hand off. What we are going to do is build, and I'm using a word out of your vocabulary, right? We are going to build the right segues. For information and patient transfers into these hospitals so that there is minimum wastage of time between understanding that they need a tertiary care to they being actually provided the right needed tertiary care.
Okay.
So what happens is otherwise finding a hospital, getting all the tests done again at the hospital, figuring out the reports, etc., takes a lot of time, which is very crucial for health during that period. So the idea is how do we kind of create those clear lines of communication, of transfers, so that we can save on that time as much as possible.
Very interesting. I think it's a fascinating concept. I mean, I remember in 2003 when I was looking at what to do, my first thing with a cardiologist friend was to build a chain of 100-bed hospitals.
Yeah.
That's when he realized that it was too expensive. We didn't have the capital. So we went into a pharmacy chain.
Right.
So good luck.
Yeah, fully with you. I think infrastructure cost is some. See, and my belief is that the infrastructure exists. Aaj ki date mein log bimar bhi ho rahe hain aur theek bhi ho rahe hain. So aisa to nahi hai ki logon ko care nahi mil rahi. See, I think the problem is twofold. It's around quality of care and timeliness of care. A stitch in time, proverbial stitch in time, is just not happening. And those are the problems that we need to solve for. Infrastructure is there. Infrastructure pe itna bada issue nahi aaj ki date mein. See, my sense is half the hospitalizations that we are leading to today are not needed.
Correct.
Because if we catch that disease earlier into the life cycle, we could have prevented half the hospitalizations.
That is true. That is true.
But if you take out those half hospitalizations, you have overcapacity. Right? And I'm still talking. See, the capacity, availability, etc. is problem in far-flung areas.
Right.
Right? That we need to solve for there.
Well, then in that case, you know, you have a bigger challenge. Because I have noticed that with Indians, the normal comment is that, I don't want to go for a test because I don't know want to know what's wrong with me. As long as I don't know what's wrong with me, I'm okay. And I've often argued this with a lot of people to say, that's no answer.
So I think it's more than that I don't want to know what is wrong with me. I think the problem lies elsewhere. I think the problem lies what happens is a lot of times what we are saying and what we are really saying are different.
Mm.
Right? What you might be saying is, ki, I don't want to know what is wrong with me.
Mm.
But what you're really saying is either you're worried about the cost impact of it.
Okay.
You don't trust the doctor or your caregiver, or you're too lazy to go around it.
Right.
It's actually one of dominantly these three. There are multiple more reasons, but it is dominantly between these three that you're really saying behind the words, right? And what we are trying to do is trying to solve for those.
Mm.
The reason we want to do subscriptions, the reason we want to actually do an insurance product is here. You shouldn't have to worry. And your insurance should kick in only if you're doing the entire care.
Okay.
You can't cherry pick out of what the doctor is saying.
Very true.
If the doctor is saying MRI, then you get your medicines also for free provided you get the MRI done.
Okay. Correct.
Right. Yes. You can't just... We are a population which loves popping pills. Mm. My mom for the longest time has been calling her medicines mithai.
Right.
Right? We are in love with those.
Mm.
My co-founder is a doctor who has been prescribing placebo pills to most people that he has been seeing, knowing that there is nothing wrong with them, but they want a medicine to show to their mother-in-laws or daughter-in-laws.
True.
Right? So I think we have to battle that. The reason I'm saying we are falling into this pit of wrong mindsets and behaviors is precisely that.
Well said. So, Saurav, let me move to the second part of our program, which is some general questions on startups and entrepreneurship.
Anytime.
And as you just said, that you are a serial entrepreneur. My first question
is... The FBI is not me.
Like the FBI. why not? And why not?
Yeah.
My first question to you, and I've been asked this question many times by people who write into me, what is the advantage of having a startup and going solo or getting a co-founder?
I think I started PrintVenue solo.
Mm-hmm.
But within the first few months, I realized that that's not going to happen. And I, you know, roped in one of my closest friends as my co-founder, and it completely changed the way I was looking at business.
Correct.
I think it is very important to have a trusted confidant when you're going through this journey, because I always say that if there is one thing which is certain about an entrepreneurship journey is that you will see abysmal lows.
Correct.
Right?
Mm.
And the only thing that can keep you going at that time is on one end, your passion and your perseverance towards what you're trying to build.
Mm.
And secondly, the people that you surround yourself with.
Correct.
Right? And that's where I think it's a saying that it always gets lonely at the top.
Mm.
I think it's a choice when you're standing up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you choose to go solo, there is ample and enough chance that you will get into the phases of journey where you'll find it lonely at the top. But if you have somebody who's as much a part of that journey with you, more than anything else, I think just emotionally, just, you know, psychologically,
right,
you find yourself in such better shape. And of course, you know, there is nothing more that a person can give you than their honest efforts, time, and a skin in the game, right? So I think I would always suggest to have at least one co-founder. Too much becomes, I think the sweet spot is 2 to 3. Anything beyond that start becoming too many cooks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Saurav, I'm now going to move to a few personal questions for you. My first question is, where do you draw your inspiration from?
Well, I think you need to draw inspiration from life around you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, of course, you know, there is a lot of role models that you can follow and do that. I think for me personally, my motivation, most importantly, comes from the impact that we can drive.
Okay.
And I think McKinsey has a lot of role to play in it, because, you know, this thing that was ingrained into us was around impact focus, impact on client, impact around you. And and I think that drives me a lot,
okay,
right? You know, in terms of whether it was with Food Panda, whether it is now with, especially now with healthcare, the kind of impact we can have. I truly believe that if we are semi-successful at what we are doing over the next 5 years, we would have changed how healthcare is delivered in our country, right? And I think that motivates me to no effect, right? So I think that being able to create that impact is my biggest motivation and my biggest driver.
My next question to you is, how do you set your personal and professional goals?
I think I always divide milestones and goals.
Okay.
Right? And for myself, I found that to be extremely useful, right? Mm-hmm. So I think my overall goals, I ensure they're scary. Right? I ensure, you know, if, especially if you're starting up, if you're an entrepreneur, if your vision doesn't scare you, then I don't think it's audacious enough.
Correct.
Right? So you need to have your eyes on the prize, but break it down to, I would say, monthly, quarterly, and annual milestones. Right? So the way it works for me, like I said, is by dividing those two very distinctively. Right? So we know that what we are building towards, and with every milestone, we should get closer towards that overall vision, that overall goal. But bite-sized milestones, which you can measure yourself against and which you can today work towards.
Terrific. My next question to you is that if you, Saurabh, were a role model to millions of children who followed your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
First, I would strongly urge them against it.
Okay. Against following you or becoming an entrepreneur?
No, following me.
Okay.
I think I won't change a thing.
Okay.
I think I'm loving my journey. It's been extremely rigorous, and I love the rigor of it. You know, my mom has always said, "Tujhe zindagi mein kabhi bhi koi cheez ek bari mein nahi mili." But I think it's always been sweeter the next time around, right? So I don't think I would change anything, right? So I think my every success, my every failure, my every experience comes together to kind of make a sum total of where I am today, and I'm actually quite happy with it. I don't think I'm remotely successful as of today. I think you introduced me as somebody who has been successful. I, as nicely as I can, I would want to disagree with that. I think there is a huge journey ahead. I think we're just getting started. I think I had a couple of good starts, but I don't think we've been able to create, I personally have been able to create the impact that I want to as yet. So, but with all your wishes, all your luck, all your blessings, hopefully soon.
I'm sure. And my last question to you, this is in the context of the pandemic we are all going through. How are you rethinking your life in the new world order?
I think the world is going in circles right now. I think what it has brought to fore is the entire uncertainty around it.
Right.
Right. So I think it's very important to live in the present. And that's the biggest learning out of it. Now the methodologies to get there, I think everybody went, you know, electronic. We are doing this over a video call. Otherwise, you would have been having a coffee across the table and making it more than what it is right now, right? But I think cry for human interaction is growing stronger in people. I think a lot of us will fall back into our old ways at the first possible instant. But what would have changed is the fact that we understand the uncertainties and what we value in life. Well, right? I think that's the biggest learning around it. And I think that's what will stay with us. Methods, means will all come and go. Right? And I can give you examples of healthcare consultations, right? So in April, May, everybody was gung-ho about e-consultations, and we saw a fantastic fantastic surge. We grew about 10x in our e-consultations over the next 3 months. But everything is coming back, and now people want to see doctors back in person as the clinics open, right? So it is that cry for human interaction that we all have as an as our inherent need. But I think the quality of those conversations and our view towards them, we have changed.
Wonderful. Saurabh, thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you all success.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.